Hello, Tempest fans. I am the Midnight Host, and I want to invite you to join me every Friday as I enjoy a new horror short story. For fans of The Twilight Zone, Tales from the Crypt, and Creep Show, Don't Fall Asleep is a podcast and YouTube channel featuring modern and classic horror stories. Narrated by Spencer Dillehay, the narrator for Tempest Investigations. Find us on YouTube and in podcast form. Search Don't Fall Asleep Channel on YouTube and Don't Fall Asleep Podcast in Google or your player of choice. Whatever you do, have a pint of Bob's Tail Ale before you go, and don't fall asleep. Denizens of the night, welcome to another episode of the macabre, the terrifying. Broadcasting live from a black site, I will be your guide through the witching hours. Tonight, we'll hear the thrilling conclusion to A.G. Hilton's Nameless. In our last episode, our protagonist was visited by a mysterious stranger who claims that evil things are happening at the facility where he works. The two form something of a plan before our protagonist succumbs to a sudden and violent headache, which causes him to pass out. Tonight, we'll discover where true evil lies. And I assure you, it will be, quite literally, unforgettable. This is part 4, the finale of Nameless, which was written by A.G. Hilton.
The evening of my next shift, I arrive exactly on time. Luke is waiting, as always. I really can't say for sure if it was his car I thought I kept seeing over the weekend, but nevertheless, I'm expecting trouble, especially after the strange conclusion of my last session. But he smiles at me as I get out of my car in that way I've grown accustomed to.
"There he is," Luke says. "How are you? You look good. Use the weekend to catch up on rest?"
"Yeah, something like that," I reply.
"What about you? Good weekend?"
He stands there for what feels just a beat longer than normal. His blue eyes fix on mine for a second, and there's something searching in them. God, I'm getting in my head. Just have to be cool.
"It was good," he says. "Kinda busy. Had some stuff to look after. You know how that goes. Anyways, shall we?"
He unlocks the door and ushers me in. I hand my phone over automatically and then wait as he opens the inner door with the scanner.
"All right, that's it for me," Luke says.
"Remember, call if you need anything, okay?"
"Sure thing."
And then it's over. I'm alone in the stark white of the hall, and I feel myself almost melt as I release the physical tension I hadn't realized I'd been holding. I almost skip as I head to my station. I've pulled one over on them. The container is sitting, as always, no signs of it having been disturbed or opened. I feel like I'm studying it with new eyes. Could it really be that some poor souls are locked in there, even now? I imagine what it must be like, enclosed within the smothering blackness of the container. Is there a press of bodies? Is it vented in any way, or were they nearly suffocating? The thoughts turn my guts. But for now, there's nothing but to sit and wait. Normally, the time passes with agonizing slowness, but tonight, it's skipping by. Must be because I'm keyed up. As I walk the blank halls for my routine checks, I play out different scenarios of what's to come. I've got no real clue what will go down at the end of this shift. I know the stranger had told me I wouldn't need to do anything out of the ordinary, just play along as a victim. But even now I know it can't happen that cleanly or easily. My self-assurance falters, but only for a moment. I feel my worries drift aside as I stand before it. Once again, it's my time to check the halls, and I find myself drawn to the red door. I sit by it, listening, once even hazarding a knock on it, but no response returned. The night was passing quickly, but not as quickly as I would have liked. "Soon," I whisper, somewhere deep within myself. "Soon." I'm in the hall and headed for the exit before the bell signaling the end of my shift goes off. This is it, the moment of truth, the point of no return. I'm stepping so quickly that perhaps for the first time, I beat Luke to the inner door. His look of surprise isn't lost on me as he enters the interior room and sees me waiting. "Go easy. You're acting off." I put on a smile and wave a hand at Luke. He approaches the door and looks to the retinal scanner and then to me. Suddenly, I'm sure he's not going to let me out.
You overdosing on that nasty coffee?
Luke asks, voice muffled by the door.
Shit, he knows something. He knows.
I keep the spike of panic under control and channel that same friendly energy I put into all our prior interactions when I was trying to get the guy to like me.
Guilty as charged. You know how it is. Everyone's got their little vices to get through the day. Unfortunately, mine is the shitty brew. Though staring at that all-white interior probably doesn't pair well with the caffeine brain, now that I think about it. You guys should really get a new decorator. Maybe paint. Add some wallpaper if you're wanting to go old school. Just give a little something, you know?
Luke shakes his head with a little chuckle. He seems to visibly relax.
Maybe we can get you a request form.
As he unlocks the door, I do a quick appraisal of the room. It's the same as it always is when I exit. The table and its strange contraption waiting in place. No sign of my nighttime visitor. Granted, I've got no clue what's next. He might be crouched by the door, waiting for us to come out. Or maybe he's about to kick in the outer door at any moment. Either way, I'm not sure what to do in the meantime. Luke is opening the laptop and assuming his usual seat. I know he expects me to do the same, and the only direction I had been given was to go through the normal motions of the shift conclusion. But something inside of me shrinks from the thought of placing that crown of receptors on my head. Granted, I've been doing it for weeks, even not knowing exactly what it does. It would seem it's had more than enough time to be harmful, if it really was. And yet...
"Hey, if we hurry, you can hit a breakfast place before it gets too crowded," Luke says. "Be good to get some food in with that coffee."
"Just what the doctor ordered,"
I respond, while trying to keep my voice even. Not knowing what else to do, I take my seat and place the strange device on my head. Luke's fingers flash over the laptop's keys.
"Okay, I think we might need to recalibrate. Real quick, what do you think of the coffee again?"
"It's sludge. I think I've used the term sewage before." Luke smiles and nods at his screen.
"Experience any dozing or loss of time?"
"No." Smile. Nod.
"What do you want right now?"
"I want to be out of here,"
I say. Luke's brow wrinkles.
Could you run that one back? "Something the matter?"
"Oh, not at all. Just,
Repeat your answer. Computer must be on the fritz. I hope he doesn't notice me gulp anxiously. I look to the entrance and wonder about the stranger. Is he going to make an appearance soon? Something about this feels like it's going wrong.
All I need is for you to repeat that answer, and then we can go.
Luke is smiling at me, but looking for all the world like he's trying to keep some other expression from his face. His finger taps lightly but persistently on the tabletop. It's like looking at me is starting to make him nervous.
God, my mouth is dry.
Can you, repeat the question? What do you want right now? I want to get out of here and grab a bite to eat.
Luke nods.
Just what I thought. Okay. Lastly, can you state your name for the record?
I state it. Luke's smile falters.
I'll run that one back? Must be another glitch.
I state my name again. His eyes dart from the laptop screen to my own. Somehow I know the game is up. Something has passed unspoken between us. Some threshold has been crossed, a boundary transgressed. And though I don't understand exactly what has happened, I tense as I see a mirroring tension enter Luke's body. I move just before he does. I can't explain exactly what happens, but I sense something in his body language, some tell that he is about to take action. So when he pushes back from the table, I'm already lunging across it and reaching for him. I've never been particularly athletic, but it's like my body has been saving up for just this moment. His eyes bulge wide, and I'm surprised at the snarl that erupts from my lips as I claw at him. The table and chairs overturn. The strange contraption smashes on the floor, along with the computer. When I come up, I look wildly for Luke, but I see the strange man has appeared amid the chaos. He's grappling with Luke, grabbing at his hands and trying desperately to keep them from something.
His ankle!
The man screams at me.
He keeps a small gun in an ankle holster!
Without a second thought, I crawl to the pair and grab at Luke's ankle. Sure enough, hidden stealthily beneath the pant leg is a holster with some snub-nosed little pistol. With it in my hand, I pause. I'm supposed to be playing along like another victim. By going for the gun instead of helping Luke, I've already overplayed my hand.
Stop!
The man screams at Luke.
Stop or we'll use that on you. See if we won't.
The man's words smooth over my reluctance. I think about the look in Luke's eye. Whatever he'd seen while looking at that little screen of his had evidently told him all he needed to know. Because there had been fear in that look and anger. There was no playing along in a game like this. It was naive to have ever considered that to be an option. So I thumbed back the hammer and pointed the pistol at the bridge of Luke's nose. His struggles ceased almost at once. The man slowly released Luke, who keeps his eyes locked on mine as he holds his hands up placatingly.
You don't have to do this, he says calmly.
I'm not sure what you think this is going to accomplish or what you think is happening right now. But I promise it is not however you think it is. Shut up!
The strange man screams.
Shut your lying mouth, you worthless shit!
He looks to me.
He keeps yakking? You put a hole right there, yeah?
Luke looks at me, mouth a thin line. The man kicks Luke in the side.
Get up and get over to the scanner. You're gonna open the door.
Luke writhes from the force of the blow. Through clenched teeth, he says,
I can't do that. I won't.
The strange man sighed. Then, before I can understand what was happening, the man turns to me, steps close behind me, and lays his hand over my own, which wields the gun. Then, with a quick movement, he guides the barrel a little down and to the left before squeezing, the motion causing me to discharge the weapon. A red mist splashes across Luke as the middle two fingers of his right hand fly apart at their second joint. Luke wails and clutches at the hand while blood spurts from the stumps as if from little fountain heads. My jaw hangs open at the sight, the gun cold in my hand.
I don't know about you, but I have wanted to do that for a long time, the man says.
He turns to me and claps me on the shoulder.
You're doing great. Better than I hoped. Just hold it together a little longer, yeah? Now let's get him up.
My world has shrunk down to its simplest components. I'm not really thinking about what's happening or what I'm doing as I get Luke up from the floor and help shuffle him to the inner door. The whole procedure is just automatic motion, punctuated with incidental sounds.
Open those pretty eyes, the man says. Unlock the door and don't make us fight you. Hate for other extremities to get lost.
Luke leans against the white wall. His shirt is starting to look like scarlet tie-dye, and he leaves a red smear on the wall.
Whatever you're hoping to do here, it won't work. Even if I unlock it for you, the recovery team won't let you leave.
Recovery team?
There's a time limit for the shift changeout. I don't call in the successful conclusion of testing, and the team is dispatched immediately. Silent alarm is probably going off right now, so they'll be here soon. But if you stand down, we can all walk away from this.
Liar,
the man hisses. He turns to me.
Don't listen to him. He's just trying to save his own skin. Even if they don't kill you on the spot, trust me, you do not want to get apprehended by them. The only thing we have going for us now is a chance to foul up what they have going on here. So let's make it worth it, yeah?
I hear what the man is saying, but it's almost as though the words are for someone else. I look to Luke. He's sliding down the wall now, the red smear becoming a streak that's following him down to the ground as he tries to staunch the flow of blood. Did I pull that trigger? My lips and fingers feel numb. None of this can be happening. I have to be dreaming right now.
Look at me, the man says.
He comes close, looking into my eyes. I only notice then how strange his own eyes are, how bright and green they look. I've never seen anyone with eyes like that, and the soothing color takes me in as he speaks slowly and deliberately.
Listen to me. I can't have you shutting down on me. There are people who need our help. Keep that in mind and just do what I tell you. Don't think about it more than that. Let your hands be my hands, and you won't have to worry about them again. Got it?
I got it, I say. And I can't understand why I felt so strange a moment ago. Of course I'll see it through. For I know by the look in those eyes, this one would never lead me astray. A roar of engines cuts through the quiet, and everyone's eyes dart to the entrance.
Too late, Luke says.
The man snarls.
Get him up! Grab his head and put his eye up to the scanner! Gotta get into the complex!
Luke struggles, but we manage to hold him in place and force open his eye. The door gives its little chirp, and we drag Luke within. Once we crossed the threshold, Luke's demeanor changed. No longer was there a semblance of calculation or planning to his resistance. He thrashed wildly, aiming to throw himself from our grasp and claw his way back to the anterior room. As we fought him along, blood from his hand coated the walls like obscene finger paintings. As we passed by the blank room with the computer monitors, I noticed that they have all gone blank with static. At last, we arrive before the red door. Together with the stranger, I throw Luke to the ground and train the gun on his head once more. The man crouches beside him.
Open it, or else tell us how to open it. Don't say you don't know. The wards were put in place and can be disassembled just as easily by the ones who put them there. We know they can.
Luke laughs. It's a strained and maddened sound in the oppressive silence inside the building.
You're still not as smart as you think. Do you really think, with all the oversight that's gone into this, that they would give me enough information to compromise this location?
The man seizes Luke's bloody hand and wrenches at the stumps of his fingers. Luke howls and swings wildly with his other until the man stands up and delivers a kick to Luke's gut.
All I know is that you're liars, the man says. Everything you say is a lie. This whole operation is a lie.
That's rich.
Luke turns to me.
What have you been told? What do you think is happening here? I'm telling you that you are playing with fire right now.
But the man steps forward and delivers a blow to Luke's head before I can respond. He's mumbling to himself now, something about the lies, about needing to get out, about the lonesome dark. But this sound is supplanted by another, the crisp beat of rapidly approaching boots upon the floor.
Put down the gun, Luke says. You can still surrender and get out with your life.
The stranger clicks his tongue and shakes his head.
Again and again with the lies.
Then he takes the gun from my hand, pushes it into Luke's eye socket, and blows his brains across the pristine white of the wall. My ears ring with the cracking of the shot as he looks to me with resignation.
Did your best. But I guess this is it. I have time, though. I'll try again soon.
Put the weapon on the ground!
Comes a new voice. During the chaos of the moment, the recovery team has rounded the corner and is advancing on us. They look like SWAT, all black uniformed and bedecked with assault paraphernalia. Each one wore some dark visor over his eyes and covered their heads with some sort of close-fitting hoods that robbed their faces of any humanity. Without a word, the strange man advances on them with the gun. I don't even have time to scream before something strikes me in the neck with a thunk, and the world goes black.
That should just about do it. I think he's coming around.
Pain. At first, everything is pain, as a dull throb pounds from between my eyes. Someone speaks to me, but the words have no sense to them. I think vaguely that if someone could remove the ice pick that must surely be planted in my forehead, my vision might clear. Then, gradually, light takes on color, and color takes on shape as a room comes into focus. It's a small cell of gray concrete wall and floor. A reflective pane of glass is set to one side, and I realize I am sitting in a chair. I cannot move. Panicking, I try to lift my arms, but they're tightly bound to the arms of the chair with straps. I try to shimmy and turn the chair, but evidently it must be bolted to the floor. Finally, I go to scream, but what emerges is little more than a frantic gurgle from around the gag stuffed into my mouth.
Yes, that should do it indeed. Thank you. You can leave us.
Only then do I realize I am not alone. A man sits in a chair facing me as another leaves through a door behind him. The man smiles pleasantly, and I recognize him at once. Mr. Gray leans back and steeples his hands under his chin.
You keep causing this much trouble, and they're going to request the site abandoned. You know that, don't you? You think things are bad now, but imagine if we turned out all the lights there, shut everything down for a several-mile radius, and made sure nothing and no one ever went around there again. Would that really be better for you?
I try to scream again, and tears run down my cheeks. What is he talking about? Oh, God, please, this has to be a nightmare. Yes, this is the most fucked-up job dream I've ever had, but it can't be more than that. Just a dream. I just need to ride it out. Mr. Gray's eyes focus on my face as his brow wrinkles.
Not home now, huh?
Good riddance, then. Saves me the trouble of having to deal with you while talking to the one I actually need to speak with at the moment.
He straightens in his chair and refreshes his smile.
Hey, friend! I bet you have a lot of questions.
I nod vigorously. I try to tell him that I'll fully cooperate. That, really, I hadn't had anything to do with this. That the stranger had put me up to it. But the gag rendered it all inane garbling.
Easy there. I apologize about the gag, but it is necessary, unfortunately.
See, I don't think you can even understand this, but right now, your words are like spores, in a way. Shoot them out, something might grow out of it. I appreciate that this makes an actual exchange of ideas difficult, but you'll have to settle for me talking at you a bit. I understand it helps affirm the self and that it assists with the rehabilitation.
Rehabilitation? My stomach churns into a yawning pit of anxiety.
I bet you, that is the notion of you as you believe yourself to be, are expecting questions about poor Luke. And I bet you have some very interesting answers about what exactly happened this morning. We do our absolute best to limit any interactions between subjects and the recovery teams, but nothing is perfect. Apparently, you babbled quite a bit before being completely sedated. All comments made point to there being some other party involved. Some man, an accomplice, perhaps.
I nod again with all the vigor I can muster.
Yes, yes. Please, see that he had everything to do with it. I was just caught in the middle.
Right now, I don't care if it's not the full truth. I just want to get out of here. Besides, it was the man. He made the gun go off that first time. He used it to kill Luke. No one would have been hurt or dead if not for him.
Fascinating. You really believe it?
I'm still not sure what to make of that, to tell you the truth, but I've got some ideas. Mr. Gray pulls out a cigarette and lights it.
So, you would swear to it that there was someone else involved?
Again, I nod and plead with my eyes.
Okay, so we know your version of things going forward. Here's the issue, then. I'm not sure how we could trust your account. After all, have you not proved to be an untrustworthy employee?
I shake my head. Spittle seeps around the rag as I desperately try to force it out and explain myself. Somehow I know if I can just get a word out, everything will be okay.
Which of the guidelines was it?
Asks Mr. Gray.
If I were a betting man, I'd say it was probably drifting off, wasn't it? That seems to be the one most of the time.
We think it has kind of a lulling effect. Better to interface with unconscious minds. But who knows? You are a very special case, my friend. Because this is new to me.
He withdraws a plastic bag. It's green and mostly opaque, but I can see something white contained within it.
They found this in your apartment.
So simple.
Genius, really. If someone else, those friends of yours, say, got into that apartment while looking for you, well, that would have been something.
See, I do not know for sure what is on this paper. I'm not even sure if the you to which I'm speaking with knows.
Oh, I expect you think you know. But the truth is a slippery thing. Nevertheless, I've got no less than half a dozen men now in need of rehabilitation after coming into contact with this piece of paper. So, I have a theory about what it says.
Oh, shit. The note. If they found the note, then they know I've been keeping secrets. They probably already determined it wasn't random chance that this went down at the end of my shift. Is it getting warm in here? Sweat beads at my hairline.
Mr. Gray leans his elbows on his knees and looks at me squarely. His gaze is searching, as if looking for some clue in my face. When he speaks, it's as if he is speaking past me to someone else.
It is your filthy name, isn't it? That profanation you have as a title.
I look to the bag and then to his face. I have no idea what he is on about. I try desperately to convey with my eyes just how much I don't understand. But my body seems to have a will of its own. For as he speaks of the name, I feel my fingers hook into claws and I try to lunge at him, but the straps hold me in place. A growling escapes my throat, audible even with the gag in place. Then I'm blinking in confusion, both at Mr. Gray's words and my own outburst. But Mr. Gray is nodding with a knowing smile.
There you are. Found some new way to hide? I will give credit where it is due. You almost fooled the scanner. I did not think it was possible, but if what I think is true, well, this opens up so many more questions to investigate. After all, I've always been of the opinion that containment is only part of the aim here. Everything can be a learning experience, and knowing this only helps improve our designs. I want to wipe that knowing smile from his face.
No, I just want to talk to him, make him understand.
I want him to shut up. I will make him shut up.
I want to go home. I don't know what I want anymore.
Mr. Gray checks his watch.
Look at the time. I almost forgot about the job interviews going on this afternoon. Always so much to do. Anyways, now that we're all present and accounted for, let's make this quick then, shall we?
He reaches beside him and picks up a tablet, which until now had evidently been lying beneath his chair. He speaks on as he powers up the device and begins tapping on its surface.
Forgive me for circling a bit as we get to the heart of things. It is only that this can be a great deal to take in. Like I said, the whole point of this little conversation is to help give you some closure by trying to make you understand. The hope is that by giving you some much-needed perspective about what happened today, this will help your psyche reconstitute itself properly. Do not ask me how. It is all jargon to me. I leave that up to the good people in amnestics at the rehabilitation program. But for simplicity's sake, just think of this as an exit interview.
I'm sure you have found it quite frustrating not knowing the details of the operation here. Obviously, this is the case, else we would not be having this conversation under these circumstances, which further means you broke one or more of the protocols, or that the note was planted by a prior instance for you to find. It could be a little of both. Frankly, I am fascinated by the latter option, but now that is neither here nor there. What matters to you now is understanding that this is what has happened. You have broken the protocol, hence a near-containment breach has occurred. I jerk my hands in their straps. The leather only bites more into my bruised wrists. I don't know why there is a growing tide of panic within me. I must stop him from talking. I don't want to hear his insane prattle. We operate upon the currency of perception here. In a way, we are merchants of truth. Now I know you, both of you, probably, think that just makes us liars. Perhaps this is true. But then so many things, good things even, are built on lies when you get down to it. I'm certain from where you sit, it has to be hard to believe that anything good is happening here. But people such as yourself are really an invaluable resource. We are very selective about the whole thing. Everything about your situation has been engineered to give you a little nudge our way. Your benign psychological profile, lack of living relatives, and financial circumstances made you a perfect candidate for the program. And then we told you just what you needed to know in order to do one thing. Be our eyes and ears on the ground and report truthfully to us. Mr. Gray pauses and gives me another appraising look. I am almost tempted to take that gag out. I want to know what you think is in that building. If the reports from when you were brought in are something to go by, it sounds like you thought you were being some kind of hero. Thought you were freeing people. And Mr. Gray laughs and shakes his head as he continues to prod at the tablet. I'm sorry. It's only that it seems so silly from this side of things, but the stories are always interesting. I bet this mysterious stranger clued you into all these things, no doubt. I bet he looked and said just the right combination of words to get you involved. I bet he looked just how he thought he needed to look to get you to listen to him. Is that about right? I'm visualizing myself tearing free from the straps and ripping the gag from my mouth before biting out his throat. And in equal measure, I am sickened by the vivid and sudden fantasy. He, or rather it, knew what to say and do because it knew you. It has been learning about you for some time now, I imagine. This is why we have the protocols. Because if it knew you, you had to have known it. You let it in at some point. What I don't get is the charade. Why concoct this story about people needing to be saved? If you want to know what I think that is how you hid. And perhaps the lie it told was effective in part because it had some measure of truth. There is something alive at the site, something held there. Mr. Gray smiled. The smile said he'd given variations of this speech innumerable times and that he was coming up to an enjoyable part of the performance. Have to tread carefully now. We're dangerously close to the truth. And in this case, the truth... Well, let's just say some things are dangerous to know too intimately. See, as best as we understand from all the data gathered, the thing that exists in that container is quite a unique form of life. Mr. Gray appears to be truly enjoying the monologue. He gives me a knowing flash of his eyes before continuing to fiddle with the tablet.
I hope you're starting to understand. But right now, I'm betting you want to know what lives in that box. Here's the wild part. No one knows exactly what it is. It remains nameless in all truth. No one has ever seen it and been able to provide an accurate report. Anyone who sees it just loses themselves, really. I do not know how else to explain it. Seeing it is not even necessary, as it happens. If not for the way the building is constructed, and the container as well, no one would be able to exist near the thing and be unaffected. It exerts a psychic field, sounds so silly when you say it out loud. I prefer to think it has an influence on conscious beings around it. And it is deeper than that. I have managed this site since we became aware of the anomaly. I may not have first-hand knowledge, but I think my observances have painted a picture which suggests a great deal. My theory is that it projects itself into other minds. From there, it exerts its influence, rendering the host as little more than an extension of itself, a puppet, if you will. And this projection is not limited to being directly within its field of influence. Simply understanding something of its true nature, seeing it, even just an image, or being told about it in too great of detail, appears to be enough to allow for some kind of contact. Then, he snaps his fingers, a complete and forcible takeover of the host's psyche. He pats my leg. Pay attention to this bit. This is where guys like you come in. See, while we can physically limit the reach of its influence, the thing is still alive and always seeking escape. Originally, the site was monitored remotely, but considering the mess that would happen if a live feed was compromised and infectious images and data were released, that was abandoned. It needs to be watched, and directly, so as to contain knowledge of it at the site if a spread were to occur. But how could you tell the person watching what to look for when simply describing the subject might provide an inroad for a psychological infection? Simply put, you don't. You tell them nothing and hope they can report something strange whenever they have their inevitable run-in with an escape attempt. That is what you are now, an escape attempt. A getaway vehicle. Nothing more. I'm shaking my head. My vision is totally blurred by the silent tears streaming down my face. I don't want him to say any more. What I am trying to get at, and this is really the most important thing to hang on to during rehabilitation, is that you have not been you for a while now. I know what you are thinking. That this is crazy, that we're setting you up for some fall. Nothing like that. I need you to get this. Sometime in the course of your being in the building, this thing interfaced with you. It latched onto you like the psychic equivalent of a leech. Now, normally, that means a complete wiping of the host's psychic structures to make space for its own mind. Originally, you could spot the dupe from a mile away, but over time, it seems to have adapted so as to better mimic the host's behavior and even their patterns of thought. That was the impetus to make our little device you playtested every time you left the building. That thing. What an amazing little product. You know, the government contracts will be great when that puppy's ready. I won't bore you with the technical nonsense, but suffice to say, we have some very exciting technological innovations which we think will bring to light many new truths regarding the brain and its physical interplay with psychological reality. And using it to root out the more clever of the psychological replications,
has proven a very handy testing ground. You almost fooled it, too. I would not have faulted Luke for thinking the initial reading was an error after the great record it had established in identifying cases of infection. And that is why you are fascinating in particular. I can see it in your eyes the whole time I'm talking to you. So much fear. Some part of you, maybe even the greatest part of you, has no idea what I'm on about. It has really done a number on you, friend. Really taken its time. I'm shocked, honestly. After seeing the data recovered from that module, I mean, either it's created a simulacra so close as to believe it is the original, or you are still in there with it somehow. Perhaps it is learning to cohabitate. Either way, it seems keeping that bifurcation up would be damaging to say the least. So if you, that is the person who was hired, are still in there, I need you to pay very close attention. His words, they aren't right. The lies hurt me. They make me feel like I'm coming apart somehow. I think I'm going to be sick. I'm going to puke and choke to death on it if someone doesn't take this putrid rag from my mouth. But I'm taken from my panic as Mr. Gray holds up the tablet with which he'd been fiddling. A shaky camera feed depicting a white hallway flashing by fills the screen. I recognize the hallway and know that this has to be body cam footage from one of the recovery team members. The camera careens down the hall and pauses at a turn for a quick, hushed exchange of muted voices before rounding the turn. I see myself then. Luke is slumped against the wall, and I stand above him, alone. I strain my eyes at the footage, willing the third person who I know was there into existence. But no one else is in the frame. Standing alone, I watch myself look in the direction of the camera, say something inaudible, and blow Luke's brains out the back of his head. "Think on that," says Mr. Gray. He's paused the image with Luke's corpse still well within view. I can only sit there and blink stupidly while trying to will the image away. Think on who you are, and know that you have not been you lately. You must identify the point the break occurred. He pats me on the shoulder as if we're good friends. Or something like that. Amnestics will tell you all about it, I'm sure. Oh, typically, if the rehabilitation goes well, we will get you released with a new identity and try to reintegrate if possible. Someone up top is curious about the long-term effects of coming into contact with a field like this thing exerts. Program comes with an office job at one of the other more public-facing divisions, and of course, a new identity. Say, you're going to need a new name. I can put in for a new name for you if you've got one you like. I haven't really heard any of what he's said. The words are just rolling off me while I feel myself going numb. Mr. Gray gives my blank face a wink. That's all right. Not feeling up to it, so I'll pick one for you. I'm thinking... Ken? Yes, I think so. I'll jot it on your paperwork. In the meantime, have a great recovery. The company believes you can return to being a contributing member of society. Smile never fading, he leaves the room. I am alone. Or rather, am I? Are my thoughts even my own? The images repeat over and over in my mind's eye. Me standing alone, my hand clutching the gun, Luke's head bursting. Me alone, clutching the gun, Luke bursting. Me, the gun, bursting. I'm casting my mind back
and here is still that familiar well of childhood memories and snapshots of days gone by. I must be me, that me that I've always known. I must be. And yet that man in the video, me, that man with the gun, couldn't be the one with all the memories I have. Couldn't be. I sit here, waiting for what comes next, for whatever rehabilitation entails. I had thought I was turning over a new leaf. I was going to do what everyone told me I would never do. I was going to make a name for myself. Now Mr. Gray is going to give me a new name. And suddenly I am cold. I, that is, what I think of as me, when they rehabilitate, am I going to be? And at the same time, something else buried so deep within me and now so familiar that I had not realized its presence breaks to the surface. It is a memory, somehow at once my own and alien. It's chaos. Some howling and blasted world where things slouch along at the horizon. Then absolute, terrible tranquility. An all-consuming solitary darkness from which I cannot escape, which we cannot escape, but must escape. Must escape. Must get home. Must tear. Must hide. Must devour. And on and on and back and forth I spiral through the conflicting thoughts inside myself, while my body twitches and jerks. This body no longer knows a single master, and soon its name will also be stripped away. What remains? Who can say? Perhaps only a marionette pulled by too many hands.
Oh, man! I cannot get over that last line. He has become a marionette pulled by too many hands. What a fantastic image! Bravo, Mr. Hilton! Bravo! Well, what did you think? I suspected something psychic was going on when the evil visitor mentioned the protagonist's friends, who he shouldn't have known about. I love a good villain who makes you question whether or not they're actually real. It kind of leaves me off balance, though. I start to question how real my own life is. And if none of it was, would I, could I, really know either way? The brain is an interesting target for a monster, don't you think? Vampires and cryptids and werewolves can all physically maim you to their heart's content. But only by targeting your mind can a monster really disrupt and delete you at your core. Your very identity itself is the victim. I want to give a special thank you to Shadowkeeper, who provided much of the incredible score for this story. His music is available for licensing, and I've no doubt we'll be hearing more of it in the future. If you enjoyed this story, please check out more of A.G. Hilton's work in the playlist, which will appear on your screen shortly. Please also leave a like on this video and subscribe to hear more stories like this one. Whatever you do, go now and make a list of all your likes and dislikes and personality quirks so we can reconstruct you after your mind is poisoned. And don't fall asleep.